Ever get that feeling like you want to cut through all the noise and just grab the essence of something really important, like the core insights, without getting bogged down in every detail?
Oh, yeah. Let me
That's
play there.
exactly what we're aiming for today.
Definitely.
We've been immersing ourselves in Dr. Daniel K. Darko's lecture on the Gospel of Luke,
Good stuff.
specifically session 31,
Right.
which focuses on that apocalyptic discourse in Jerusalem, you know, Luke chapter 21, verses 5 through 38.
Yeah, those are powerful verses.
Super powerful. And I think this session's particularly interesting because it kind of shows Jesus at this transition point. You know, he's in the temple, but he's moved past those really heated exchanges with the religious leaders.
Right, those debates.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's kind of shifting into this mode of observation and teaching based on what he's seeing.
That's a good point. And it's interesting how Luke sets it up, too. You know, if you think back to our previous deep dive on Dr. Darko's lectures, we talked about that image of the scribes devouring widows' houses.
Oh, yeah, that was a pretty heavy image.
Yeah, very strong language.
And what's fascinating is that Luke uses that almost as a springboard right after that accusation. Jesus's attention is drawn to a widow right there in the temple.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great point.
So it's like this really deliberate contrast that Luke's setting up.
And this is where a deep dive really kicks off.
Yeah, we're essentially zeroing in on two main themes here in this passage.
Okay.
First, we'll look at Jesus's observation of how people are giving to the temple treasury.
Right.
And then we'll explore those kind of dramatic predictions he makes about the future.
So we're looking at generosity and prophecy.
Exactly. The mission here is to understand the core of Jesus's teaching in this part of Luke.
I like it.
What's he saying about true generosity, and what's he revealing about what lies ahead?
That's a great way to put it.
So let's jump right into that scene in the temple.
Okay.
Dr. Darko paints this vivid picture of Jesus just observing everything that's going on.
Hmm.
He's watching as these wealthy individuals come forward and put in their offerings. And then his gaze falls on this poor widow.
And Luke makes sure to give us that detail. You know, she puts in two small copper coins.
Yeah, it seems like such a tiny amount, especially when you compare it to what the rich were giving.
Right. Probably large sums.
Yeah, exactly. But then comes this incredibly powerful statement from Jesus. And Dr. Darko really emphasizes this part.
I bet.
Jesus says, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them."
Whoa.
I mean, on the surface, that just doesn't make sense, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
How could such a small offering be worth more?
That's where Jesus's explanation comes in, and it's so insightful.
Okay.
He points out that the wealthy were giving out of their abundance. You know, they had plenty left over.
Yeah, it was like spare change to them.
Exactly. Their donations might have been impressive in terms of money.
Yeah.
But it didn't really cost them anything significant.
Right. It was easy for them to give.
But with the widow, it was the complete opposite.
Ah, see.
The lecture really stresses that she gave out of her poverty, and even more than that, she gave all she had to live on.
Wow, that's powerful.
It wasn't just a portion, it was everything she had.
So it was a true sacrifice.
Absolutely. And for me, that's the core takeaway here. Generosity isn't about the size of the gift, it's about the size of the sacrifice and the purity of your intention.
That's so true. It really makes you think about your own giving.
And if we consider this within the bigger picture of Luke's gospel, it really ties in with those recurring themes of inclusion.
Mm.
Dr. Darko reminds us that Luke constantly shows how the kingdom of God embraces everyone.
Yeah.
The rich, the poor, those who are marginalized.
Everyone has a place.
Exactly. And in this specific moment, the lecture presents the widow not as someone to be pitied, but as a model for good discipleship.
That's a good point.
This woman in her vulnerable situation becomes this powerful example of true generosity.
And it's important to understand that Jesus isn't saying everyone has to literally give away everything they own.
Right. It's not about going bankrupt.
No. It's about the principle behind it, the proportion, the motivation, the attitude.
The lecture uses a really helpful illustration to explain this.
Okay. What is it?
Imagine a millionaire who donates $100,000.
Okay. Big donation.
Versus someone living in poverty who gives their last $10.
Okay, huge difference in the amount.
Yeah. But if you look at it in terms of proportion, that $10 from the person in poverty represents a way bigger percentage of what they have.
That's true. And it carries a lot more risk, too.
Exactly. That's the kind of generosity Jesus is highlighting.
It's about giving sacrificially.
And in the end, it all comes down to the heart, doesn't it?
The heart of the giver.
Yeah. The lecture emphasizes that God sees the generosity itself and the motive behind it.
So it's not just about the outward action.
No, it's about why you're giving. Are you giving to get something back, or are you giving to truly let go?
That's a deep question. Yeah. It really challenges me to examine my own motives.
Absolutely. And what's so powerful about the widow's action is that it shows this incredible trust in God, this willingness to put God first, even when facing such difficult circumstances.
And the lecture makes it clear that this doesn't mean poverty equals piety.
Right. It's not about glorifying poverty.
No, it's about recognizing that even those with very little can teach us profound lessons about service and generosity.
Okay, so we've explored this really powerful illustration of giving.
Yeah, that was great.
Now the tone of the passage shifts pretty dramatically.
Oh.
As we move into the second part, Jesus's predictions.
Okay, the prophecies.
Yeah, the lecture explains that this prophecy is kind of triggered by people admiring the temple.
They were probably impressed by its beauty.
Oh, yeah. It was this magnificent structure. And the lecture actually quotes Jesus's prophecy directly.
What does it say?
He says, "As for these things that you see, the days will come when there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down."
Wow, that's a bold statement. Can you imagine hearing that about something so central to your faith?
Yeah, you can almost picture the immediate questions popping into people's minds.
Like, when will this happen?
Exactly, and what will be the signs?
Makes sense.
And the lecture gives us some really helpful historical context here. It reminds us of Herod the Great. You know, his massive renovation of the temple.
Yeah, that was a huge project.
Oh, it's massive. The lecture mentions Josephus's account, which says it covered something like 360,000 square feet.
Wow, that's enormous.
Yeah, about the size of 9 American football fields.
9 football fields. That's incredible.
And it wasn't just the size. It was the splendor, the gold, the white stones. It was this powerful symbol of both religious and national pride.
So when Jesus predicts its destruction, it must have been utterly shocking.
Yeah, almost inconceivable. And the lecture points out that this prophecy was actually fulfilled in 70 AD.
Right, when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem.
Yeah. The Roman army led by Titus besieged the city and completely destroyed the temple.
A tragic event.
But Jesus's predictions don't stop there.
Yeah.
He goes beyond the temple's destruction and talks about other major events.
Like what?
He warns about people who will come claiming, "I am he."
Implying they're the Messiah.
Exactly. And they'll say, "The time is at hand." But Jesus tells his followers not to be deceived by them.
So there's going to be a lot of deception going on.
Yeah. And then he describes these larger global events that will precede the end.
Okay, what kind of events?
Wars and uprisings, nations fighting against nations, kingdoms against kingdoms.
Sounds like a lot of conflict.
Yeah, and then he mentions earthquakes, famines, plagues, terrifying events, and signs in the heavens.
Wow, it's like this picture of global upheaval.
Right, this period of intense turmoil. And what's interesting is that Jesus makes it clear that the end will not be at once.
So it's not going to happen immediately.
No, it's not like a straight line to the finish line.
Yeah.
There will be these disturbances, but they're not the final culmination.
So it's more about being prepared than trying to figure out the exact timeline.
Exactly. And then on a more personal level for his followers, he predicts persecution.
Wow, that's tough.
Yeah. He says they'll be arrested, brought before synagogues and prisons.
Wow.
Even made to stand before kings and governors, all because of their association with him.
That's serious persecution.
But even within this grim forecast, there's this really powerful promise.
What's that?
Jesus says, "This will be your opportunity to bear witness."
Ah, I see.
So their suffering becomes a platform for them to share their faith.
To testify even in the face of opposition.
And he gives them this incredible assurance.
What does he say?
"For I will give you a mouth and a wisdom which none of your adversaries will be able to withstand or contradict."
So he's promising them divine help.
Yeah, the ability to speak with clarity and conviction even when they're being challenged.
That's a powerful promise.
And then comes a really difficult part. Jesus warns about betrayal by family and friends.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and even more tragically, he says some of them will be put to death.
Oh, wow.
But even amidst this, he offers this seemingly paradoxical promise.
What might you say?
He says, "But not a hair of your head will perish."
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and the lecture interprets this not as a guarantee of physical safety.
Right, because clearly some will be killed.
Exactly, but rather as an assurance of their ultimate preservation. God's enduring care and their final victory through faith.
So it's about their spiritual well-being ultimately.
Yeah, and then the focus shifts back to Jerusalem.
Okay.
Jesus predicts that it will be surrounded by armies, and that will be the sign that its destruction is near.
The sign to flee.
Exactly. He instructs those in Judea to flee to the mountains, those in the city to get out and those in the countryside not to enter.
So it's a very specific warning.
And he describes this period as a time of great distress and wrath against this people.
Wow, strong words.
Yeah, he talks about people being killed, taken captive, and Jerusalem being trampled underfoot by the Gentiles.
Until
the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled.
Okay.
And the lecture draws on Luke Timothy Johnson's commentary here.
What does he say?
He suggests that while Luke's description might seem somewhat restrained for his original audience, many of whom probably lived through the events of 70 AD.
Yeah, they saw it firsthand.
These fulfilled prophecies would have been a powerful confirmation of Jesus' claims.
It would have validated his words.
Yeah, and it would have given even more weight to his predictions about the Son of Man.
Okay, so let's talk about those predictions. What does Jesus say about the coming of the Son of Man?
Oh, they're pretty dramatic, filled with cosmic imagery.
Okay.
He talks about signs in the sun, moon, and stars.
Celestial signs.
Distress among nations, people overwhelmed with fear because of the roaring sea and the surging waves.
Wow, it's like this picture of cosmic chaos.
Yeah, and then comes that pivotal moment. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory.
So it's a visible return, a glorious return.
And the instruction that follows is so important.
What does it say?
Now, when these things begin to take place, straighten up and raise your heads because your redemption is drawing near.
So it's a message of hope amidst the turmoil.
Exactly. A reminder of the ultimate deliverance that awaits his followers.
And to illustrate this idea of recognizing the signs, Jesus shares the parable of the fig tree.
Right. That's a good point.
He explains that just as the budding fig tree signals the coming of summer, these predicted signs will indicate the nearness of the kingdom of God.
And then we come to that statement that's caused a lot of discussion and debate.
Oh, yeah, which one?
Jesus says, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all has taken place."
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
And the lecture outlines four main ways that this generation has been interpreted.
Okay, what are they?
The first is that it refers to Jesus' own contemporaries, that all these events would happen within their lifetimes. The second is that it refers to the Jewish people as a whole.
Yeah.
The third, which the lecture notes is probably the least likely interpretation, is that it refers to humanity in general.
So like everyone alive at any point in time.
Yeah. And the fourth interpretation, which seems to fit best with the theme of recognizing the signs, is that this generation means the generation that sees these predicted events starting to happen.
So
when they see these things unfolding, they'll know that the end is drawing near.
That makes sense.
But regardless of the specific interpretation, the lecture emphasizes the overall call for vigilance.
Yeah, that's a consistent theme throughout.
Jesus urges his followers to watch yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and cares of this life and that day come upon you suddenly like a trap.
So don't get distracted by worldly things.
Yeah. And he says, stay awake at all times, praying that you may have strength to escape all these things that are going to take place and to stand before the Son of Man.
It's a call to be spiritually prepared.
And the lecture gives this final detail about Jesus' daily routine.
Okay.
He taught in the temple during the day and then retreated to the Mount of Olives at night, with people coming to hear him early in the morning.
So these pronouncements were given within this context of consistent teaching and engagement.
Exactly. Fine. So to wrap it all up, the key takeaways from this apocalyptic discourse are pretty clear.
Okay, what are they?
Be watchful, be vigilant, stay awake spiritually, and be ready for the future, even when facing hardship.
Yeah, it's about being prepared, both practically and spiritually.
And it's interesting how Luke juxtaposes this grand prophecy with that quiet but powerful story of the widow's generosity.
That's a good point.
It shows how God's kingdom operates on both these personal levels and on this cosmic scale.
Yeah, it's both intimate and universal.
And the lecture brings it all back to a personal level for us, the listeners.
In what way?
By echoing Dr. Darko's own personal eschatology, he says that ultimately each of us will face an end.
Yeah, whether through death or the return of Christ.
And the crucial thing is our posture, our state of readiness.
It makes you think, are you ready?
The lecture asks those direct questions, are you ready if the Son of Man were to return today?
Hmm.
Or if your own life were to end today?
It's a sobering thought.
It is, but it's not about living in fear.
Right. It's about trust and vigilance.
Exactly. Trusting God with the future, but also being watchful and prepared in the present.
That's a good balance.
So here's a final thought for you to consider.
Okay. I'm listening.
How do you balance living fully in the present moment with maintaining that posture of readiness for the future?
That's a great question.
And how might the lessons we've explored today, from the widow's generosity to Jesus's predictions, shape your own perspective on navigating both of those realities?
That's something I'm definitely going to be thinking about. Thanks.
Thanks for joining me for this deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
Until next time.
See ya.